that provides for the appointment of board members is not amended in any way by this bill, so that the appointment of the board members continues to be by the governor.
Okay, but, well, Senator Wires,
I think Senator Wires raises a very valid point. If you have to discern there who is clearly the appointing authority, because I think that we do run a serious problem here. Although the workers' compensation statutes are not being amended, we are moving workers' compensation board over to finance and insurance. It should be clearly stated who's going to make the appointment. Just the same as the banking board, just the same as the other positions.
This specific one you're raising, well, you're raising generally then for all positions?
We clearly dealt with in section 51, the issue of the banking board.
Okay.
Being appointed by the governor, the Senate confirmation. I think Senator Wires asked a very legitimate point here about who's going to appoint the director of the Workers' Compensation Department, and is it in fact going to be confirmed as is under the Senate? Under what I read here in this language, you're allowing the director now, the insurance and the finance section, to appoint the director of Workers' Compensation.
That is correct.
That's exactly correct.
And I think that's a very valid point he has.
Okay. That issue we will have to deal with. At the time when we bring this budget back to put the workers' comp numbers in, we will then deal with the issue. It would be unfair to do it without participation from Mr. Long.
Yeah,
we've got
fine.
Two senators. That's certainly a Senate issue. I'm concerned about that. So please alert Mr. Long to that fact.
I believe that it's included in this bill as you want it, but I can't find the language right now.
When you say as you want, what does that mean?
That the appointing authority of the board does not change.
Yes.
And I believe that's the point you were making.
Well, then there's the question then of Senate confirmation of the director of workers' comp, which
the
we know
is changed because it would be appointed by the new director administrator of this finance insurance.
Yeah, that
department.
Would be a change.
That's
yeah.
The question Senator Wires asked.
Are you going to be able to come back? Because I'm trying to.
Yeah, hang on.
Okay. Okay. That's a biggie.
Yeah, I do.
And let me see if I can. Is it correct that there was some kind of message sent from the Senate to the governor about the status of the incumbent? Or was that unofficial?
Official it was, but I know there were some discussions about it.
Was it the lack of 16 votes?
There were some discussions about that.
I see. Well, that's a serious issue.
But aside from that, even that, it's just this is one of the biggest jobs in state government. And I think if the Senate confirmation power mean anything, this is one that ought to be considered.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I found the language. It's in section 40. It says the Workers' Comp Board, composed of three members appointed by the governor, is created within the department.
What page is
it's
that?
It's on page 21, right at the bottom of the page. So the appointments of those board members do not change.
Mm-hmm.
The Workers' Comp program, however, that's a separate issue because that isn't a statutory division any longer with a statutory officer in charge of them.
Yes. Yes, I see.
Language here in section 41. Taking. What is this? Why are you taking the director out of these requirements?
What section?
I'm reading section 41 on page 22 of the bill just because I happened to turn to it. And this is interesting. Allowing by taking director out, then I presume the inference is that the director could hold an office or other position of profit, pursue other businesses?
No.
No? What does it mean?
Mr. Chairman, there's other language in this bill that talks about what the heads of each of the divisions may or may not do. Is that correct, John?
They support the Constitution and everything still?
No. Not sure it says that.
Well. It's just taking it out. It seems unusual. If you read it then the negative, you could go, oh, the director doesn't have to support the Constitution. The director can hold another office or position of profit.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
For the record, I'm Mary Alice Hammond. I work for Stan Long, and maybe I can try to shed some light on this issue. As part of the administrative flexibility of this new department, in order to allow the maximum flexibility, there are no statutory divisions within the department. So the Workers' Compensation Department is abolished as a department or a division, as is the position of the director of that department as a statutorily created position. If you look at Section 4 of the bill, it authorizes the director of the Department of Insurance and Finance to organize and reorganize the department as the director sees fit in order to accomplish the functions that need to be carried out in the department. If you remember the chart that we had up on the wall on the first day, the organization structure will be that there are the five divisions within the department, mm-hmm. but those are not set in statute, nor are the positions of the administrators of those divisions. Section 4 authorizes the director to appoint administrative heads of those departments with the approval of the governor.
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Okay.
At the top of page, and the reason, the section that you're just looking at, the reason the word director is eliminated is because the position of the director of workers' compensation has been eliminated. So there's no one to whom that applies. On the top of page 17, in sections dealing with workers' compensation, in the statutes dealing with workers' compensation, you'll see that the definition of the word director in those statutes has changed to be the director of the Department of Insurance and Finance, since that is the only statutorily created position and since that's where the statutory responsibility will lie. The administrators that can be appointed under Section 4 assume whatever responsibility that the new director would delegate to them.
Then what you're saying is the new director of the Finance and Insurance Section is going to be the director of workers' compensation, the director of insurance and finance section and everything.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon, statutorily the responsibility, the ultimate accountability and responsibility for all of those programs will rest in the director of the Department of Insurance and Finance. And that's part of the governor's objective in creating this department, is to bring that accountability into one person. The authority exists under Section 4 for the director to appoint administrative heads of the various programs within the department and to delegate as much of the responsibility as the director sees fit to those persons, but the ultimate accountability is in that one person.
Which is subject to Senate confirmation.
Right.
Send wires.
Well, then we can, the director can appoint
whoever.
Loaners from here and there, as is having economic development, if he so chooses, or she later,
mm-hmm.
but for the immediate time he so chooses. And those people may or may not have other business activities because there's no statutory reference to them at all. So the statutory demand or mandate, you might say, that whoever does that be full time, which we remember we had a big fight about that with a prior director of workers' comp.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Senator Wires, I'm looking for it and I can't find it real quickly, partly because I'm not wearing my glasses. But there is a section in here that sets up very specific prohibitions on what the employees of this department can do and the managers of this department, and I'm looking for it, but I can't spot it immediately. Yeah. But I'm convinced that your concerns are addressed by this bill. It can't be just anyone doing any other kinds of activities.
That is a concern. Senator Hannon.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, I believe it was just this week that the Senate passed a bill dealing with former PUCs and insurance commissioners and prohibition on going back into employment, but yet you're creating another loophole here to bring people in on short term, use them, and then they go right back to whatever they were doing previously, and that's fine. There's no public perception on that, that there's a conflict of interest. But somehow there's going to be a conflict of interest, or I don't know, part of the public's perception that the person comes in and spends 4 years of their life regulating the agency and then goes back to a business that's regulated by that public utility commissioner. That's a conflict of interest. But they can come in and serve the government for 6 months in that same capacity in a different regulatory function and leave and go back to their old job. That's not a conflict of interest. That's a good definitional phrase.
Well, nothing in this bill changes our ethics laws and other chapters of Oregon law. And you raise a very interesting topic that I don't want to step into any further.
Oh, come on.
In view of what
well,
in fact is happening, Senator
Wyatt. Let me move things along in my own mind. This I see is came from the House Committee on Labor. Is it has it gone by the Senate Committee on Labor? Or?
No, and it likely wouldn't because of the lack of time. What I suggest happen is that both of you in the Senate talk with your colleagues a little bit and make sure that they understand this bill says no more separate workers' compensation department, not even a division, no more Senate confirmation of a position that close to it. Replacing that, you have accountability vested in the Director of Insurance and Finance, who also, I think, retained the title of Insurance Commissioner. Subject, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, that position is subject to Senate confirmation.
But they need to understand that, though, I think. We need to know that, probably.
That's right.
I think so. If you wouldn't mind taking that burden on, and maybe talk to somebody with the presiding officer over there.
I'd be happy to.
Okay, there we go.
Because I think it raises a point that's been an ongoing problem for a long time on positions in the Senate.
Particularly in the Senate, it's a real Senate concern.
Could we ask that that Mr. Weeks do some preliminary inquiries about how the language would be changed, not to go the way of a draft, but sort of.
To keep workers' comp is the issue, not the other.
To keep
any other position,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wires, to keep the workers' comp director as
appointed by the governor, subject to confirmation.
Sure.
I think that would be a little. I don't think that necessarily would have to disrupt totally the governor's proposal here, because we know from the senior business development officers that the governor's going to be involved in choosing and appointing them. Even though they're going to be under the director of the Department of Economic Development. So I don't think that, since that is his proposal and his plan, I don't think that to have that same thing here would necessarily disrupt the, whoever is the head of this department's ability to supervise up there.
Representative John.
I think that also be possible to set an notwithstanding station at the bottom and do whatever you want to do.
The old notwithstanding is certainly getting worked out this session. Okay, that we have a fairly major issue developed Senate side that we'll have to.
I think it's resolvable. Though.
I think it's resolvable.
Sure.
Everything is. We've worked a lot out. Well, are we ready now at this point to conceptually agree to
everything except that one point?
Okay, so we're agreeing to the language that's been discussed, but subject to our reviewing the final amendments and the budget report, we have one outstanding issue with respect to Senate confirmation of workers' comp.
We have a
position.
Mr. Chairman, we've already discussed the fee.
Yes.
And settled on those, I believe, $6.
$6.
As part of the insurance. The other banking piece is still within there.
Now, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, there isn't any intent to increase the banking fees in this budget. It's supposed to fly with the fees as they're stated now.
The action we took with the insurance agent fees was understood to manage a current problem. There was a risk that the department may be back to the emergency board and ask for more.
Mr. Chairman, I would move we adopt all the recommendations minus the one issue to be resolved.
Any objection to Senator Hannan's motion? Hearing none. So ordered. Let's close this work session, and then could we open up? Is it all right with the committee to span about 10 minutes on the shoots?
Commitment. What do you have to do?
I think just here from fiscal and the department, that there's been some negotiations, and we may be able to move it out, or we can come back tomorrow. What do you think?
Has a recent agreement?
Let's find out before I do anything.
I'll be as controversial.
Mr. Chairman, there's still a question, and I think the question is coming closer to.
What if it was cooked for another day, and we can resolve it tomorrow?
I'm not even sure another day of cooking is going to help.
Okay.
Wayne just left, however, so I don't know where you're going.
We don't need Wayne. Okay. No more. He had plenty, didn't he? Darn near lost the whole subcommittee to Representative Fabush. It was close. Proponents don't want me to wait till tomorrow, do you?
No.
Department?
Sure.
Okay. Open work session on whatever it is. How's about
3019.
Okay. Go.
Mr. Chairman, the issue here is really one of the fiscal impact to provide Parks and Recreation Department support to the Deschutes River Management Committee. The department presented a fiscal impact statement that totaled $83,000 for the 87-89 biennium. There's been a question as to whether or not all of those expenses are absolutely required or whether any portion can be absorbed within the budget. Basically, we're dealing with Boater Pass monies, which are about, if memory serves me right, $380,000, I believe, for the biennium. The Committee on Transportation approved a budget for the Parks and Recreation Division that basically expended all of those funds, a portion for management of the river, paying for the cleaning of the restrooms and the access sites, a portion for enforcement, buying state police cadet services to patrol the river, and a portion for site acquisition and site development, and fully budgeted all of the funds that we expect to be available. There is one minor element at the side, which is that we're dealing with a very low water year this year, and the Deschutes River may be the only river that has any water in it. We may see some increase in past usage of that river this summer to increase the amount of revenue projected to be received, but that's simply an aside. The issue really boils down to one, that there are most definitely going to be some extraordinary costs to support this 9-member committee, which by the law receives a per diem and is allowed other meeting expense. There's going to be an expense to that. The department estimated, I believe, $8,000, $8,200. I believe actually that estimate is probably low. It may be close, but I believe if any, it's likely to be on the low side. There are some other expenses that deal with graphics, printing, postage, all of those kinds of things, which I think we can argue about the relative amounts, but there are definitely some there. We would see fixed additional cost to doing this study, simply providing the compensation to the committee and providing the necessary S&S of about $25,000 total. The issue then comes to the department staff to assist the committee. The department currently has 1.5 FTEs in its river program. The department within that 1.5 FTE had earlier anticipated doing a management plan on the Deschutes River. Yesterday, as described to you, as a low-key effort. What has changed since their plan to absorb those particular costs within their budgeted staff is the fact that the current law with regard to how management of the Deschutes ought to be accomplished, which is basically from the start setting aside the concept that there would be any limited access. And I believe the current law does that. The current law says that the river's there for all to enjoy, and in order to keep it that way, we'll charge a use pass fee of this $1.75 a day, which are the monies we're talking about. The issue that came before the legislature this session was that ever since use of the river has grown, there have been some proponents of the concept of actually limiting access onto that river, saying that there's a carrying capacity that it has, and there ought not be any more than that. We ought to have a lottery system or anything, something to hold down the numbers of people using it to that number. There was a bill introduced this session that would have done that. This bill, as you'll remember yesterday, is really the compromise of those two positions, but it basically defers that decision, giving some additional direction along the lines of the current law, which says that limited access is really a court of last resort. If all other management methods of saving the river fail, then we can consider these others. But it doesn't continue to completely set aside the possibility that that's there. So what you've got is this process of trying to develop a management plan thrown to the committee, served by the department, and ultimately regulated by rule authority of the department. And the question is, can this process be accommodated with a half-time or less FTE staff, or is it really going to take a full body there all the time to do it?
Does that mean add 0.5 FTE to what they have?
My expectation is that if it's going to take less than a half-time FTE, it could likely be absorbed within the 1.5 that they had and within the low-key concept that it may be a little more than they had in mind, but still absorbable without doing horrendous damage to the rest of the program. If the expectation of the proponents are that this is going to be a major dispute resolution process and a very major activity, not only involve their own time, but in the support service that they request and ultimately throw back at the department, then we're dealing with the necessity to create an additional FTE and to divert some additional amounts of these voter pass monies into the FTE. The point that I think our discussions last reached was that there was a feeling on the part of the proponents of the measure that they were perhaps closer to resolution than maybe the department felt might be the case, and that their efforts could be supported by the existing staff of the agency. And that if this proved not to be the case, and that if additional efforts were required, that they would then approach the emergency board for position authority, either contractual or full-time position authority, to support the committee. And this again would come out of diversion of improvement funds of the voter pass money. So it would be basically those individuals on the committee who have an interest also in the utilization of those funds, seeing that their activities had reached a point, as well as the department recognizing that their demands had reached a point that they couldn't satisfy, that the additional staff would be provided.
Okay, so what's your recommendation? I have an appointment.
Well, sounds like to me the department's going to make sure that a conflict arises at that time. We might as well budget a little bit for it. You know, there's a up front rather than at the back door at the e-board. So I guess I'd recommend we put in, you know, authorization for the position, and what would that cost? And go ahead and appropriate the money too? Or authorize, we don't have to authorize it because it's...
Mr. Chairman, the monies are already fully budgeted.
Yeah.
the question then remains one that whether or not you want to identify in 3019 the amounts of monies previously budgeted and collected from the voter pass money that would be dedicated to this particular use function.
To dedicate some how much? $25,000 you mentioned and just plain support.
$25,000 would be peer support. It would take, in my estimation, about $78,000
total
to provide the total support, including the FTE position.
So they never asked him 85 yesterday?
83.
That's the best you could do then, LFO.
Well, Mr. Chairman, understand that clearly what we're talking about here is an expectation. We have a department that fears a great deal of staff is going to be required and that they cannot absorb it. We concur that they can't absorb a major effort.
Exactly.
Mr. Chairman, they have the voter pass program, which they have control over within their budget. I would recommend that if you see fit, authorize the position, let them have the flexibility to find that money within the voter pass program as they can. If that's possible, they could maybe ratchet down the costs as they go, as they see what the study. At this point, I think all we would ask is one position and let them eat it as they can.
All right.
And then, what does that figure come out then, as compared to this 83?
It could come out higher than 78,000.
If you keep it at 78,000 or 1,000 or lower, if possible.
We unschedule it as well. No.
We could do that, Mr. Chairman. We can't. That way they can. They can go ahead and use that money on improvements, and if they don't use it all on the position, on this program.
I think we better give the department that kind of flexibility, because I think there will come a time, probably not too far off, when the issue will come to head. And Representative Fobish was pretty clear that in 4 years he was looking toward a commission-type resolution, given the importance of this waterway to the state.
Well, is this going to leave the board the flexibility to ask to come to the board if the agency is cranking them down too tight, not giving them enough support?
The executive department would control access to the emergency board if we took this action. And I think executive department understands that the resources would be available
to the department
to the department for a position
to fulfill the requirements of this bill. That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make a motion to accept the LFO recommendation of $78,000 then and direct the department and exec that if there is a point later on into the biennium that it appears that this is not going to fulfill, then they would at least have a reason to come back to the emergency board for some type of either possibly a report and funding or whatever.
Okay, and the manner in which these monies would be available to the department are as described by executive.
Within the voter pass program as they are able to handle it.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, before you move those, there are two other amendments. One is there's a technical amendment that the definition of the Deschutes River that's in the bill is the existing scenic Deschutes. There's a bill that's passed both houses now that expanded that, and the part of the Deschutes River that's under discussion here is the old scenic Deschutes, and there's language that I have available that will define it as the old scenic Deschutes, not the expanded. And then there was the question.
Motion. Okay, add it up to his motion.
Then
okay.
There was a question of the 4-year sunset that Representative Fobish brought up.
That was in his motion, too.
Move that.
Okay, anybody disagree or oppose?
That sunset made it so I can support it.
Excellent. Okay. Adopted.
Move around as amended.
Senator Hannon moves. House Bill 3019, as further amended by the subcommittee, be reported to the full committee with the best recommendation and opposition. Hearing none.